Okay. Welcome everybody. It's wonderful to have everybody here tonight. The theme for these next 3 weeks is Sefer Yirmiyahu. Sefer Yirmiyahu, it's a long sefer, so obviously we're not going to be able to go through it in 3 weeks. I was trying to do in preparing for tonight and for the next 3 weeks is to pick out certain ideas and themes from Sefer Yirmiyahu, particularly ones that are relevant for the period which we, all, in all likelihood, are about to begin on Thursday, the period of the Bein HaMetzarim, the so-called 3 weeks between Shavuot B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, and to see how many themes in Yirmiyahu are very, very relevant to that period of time. Yirmiyahu HaNavi, as I think most of us probably know, is the preeminent Navi of the Churban Bayis Rishon, the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. He lived right before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. He lived through it. He devoted most of his prophecies prior to the Churban to warning the people of the fact that the Churban, that the destruction was going to happen. He davened for the people numerous times throughout the Sefer. It pained him tremendously to think that the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed. He stayed with the Jewish people after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. The Babylonians initially wanted to take him off to Bavel in chains, but eventually they were persuaded to leave him in Eretz Yisrael. He stayed in Eretz Yisrael with the Jews who stayed in Eretz Yisrael after the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. He was there when Gedaliah ben Achikam, the governor appointed by the Babylonians, was assassinated, and the unrest that took place after that. Then it seems like he was taken down by the Jewish people to Egypt after that episode, and that's where his life and his career came to an end. This week, the first week of the so-called Gimel de Paranusa, the 3 weeks which are between Shavuot B'Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, in which we read three haftorahs that talk about the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, this week and next week we read the first two chapters from Sefer Yirmiyahu, and therein the chapters start off by describing how Yirmiyahu HaNavi became a Navi as a young boy. He was selected by Hashem to be a Navi during the reign of Yoshio HaMelech, who died 22 years before the Churban HaBayis, before the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, was really the last king who was a tzaddik sitting on the throne of the Malchus Yehuda. He did his utmost to try to bring Klal Yisrael back to a proper Avodas Hashem, to a proper worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yirmiyahu HaNavi continued his prophecies after the death of Yoshiyahu. He went through the reigns of the four kings who succeeded Yoshiyahu, three of them sons of Yoshiyahu, one of them a grandson of Yoshiyahu, Yoachaz, Yehoyakim, Yechoniah, and Zedekiyahu. All of those kings, to a greater or lesser extent, were problematic. They did not follow in the pathway of their father and grandfather Yoshiyahu. They accelerated the process of the Babylonians tightening the net around Yerushalayim and ultimately destroying the Beis HaMikdash. And throughout all of that, Yirmiyahu HaNavi was prophesizing to the Jewish people. We're told in the very beginning of Sefer Yirmiyahu that Yirmiyahu was a Kohen. Divrei Yirmiyahu ben Chilkiyahu, min ha-Kohanim asher ba-Anosos be-Eretz Binyamin. Yirmiyahu lived in a town called Anosos, which was in the portion of Binyamin, not far from Yerushalayim. It was a town of Kohanim and Levim. And we're told that his father was Chilkiyahu. Now, who is this Chilkiyahu? Not immediately obvious from the Psukim. The Radak, Reb David Kimchi, in his commentary at the beginning of Sefer Yirmiyahu, quotes his father as saying that Chilkiyahu was actually the Kohen Gadol. When we read Sefer Melachim about an event that took place during the reign of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, again, Yoshiyahu HaMelech was the king when Yirmiyahu began his career, it describes how Yoshiyahu invested a lot of money and effort into refurbishing and fixing up the Beis HaMikdash. While the Beis HaMikdash was being refurbished and fixed up, a Sefer Torah was found in the Beis HaMikdash, and it was found by Chilkiyahu the Kohen Gadol at the time, and the Sefer Torah was open to the Tochacha, in which it described how if the Jewish people don't do the will of Hashem, they will be exiled from Eretz Yisrael. This caused great agitation within the ranks of the governing powers at the time, Yoshio, Chilkiyahu, and others. That really prompted Yoshio to embark on this massive campaign to try to bring the people back to faith and worship of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And to a large extent, he was very successful in that campaign. The Radak says that the Chilkiyahu Kohen Gadol, who was the Kohen Gadol at the time of Yoshio HaMelech, was none other than the father of Yirmiyahu. That's Yirmiyahu ben Chilkiyahu. He was the son of the Kohen Gadol. The Malbim assumes similarly in his commentary on the Navi. If that's the case, so then Yirmiyahu was born not only into a family of Kohanim who were prominent in their own right, but he was born into an extremely prominent family of Kohanim. He was literally the son of the Kohen Gadol. Nonetheless, that did not prevent Yirmiyahu from being harassed, from being persecuted, particularly during the reign of Yehoyakim, the son, one of the sons of Yoshiyahu. Yehoyakim was a wicked king. He did not follow in his father's footsteps at all. And during that period of time, Yirmiyahu was harassed and almost put to death for his recurring message that the Beis HaMikdash was going to be destroyed, and his prominence as a prominent Kohen, and perhaps even the son of the Kohen Gadol, was not something which was able to protect him in any way. In the Haftarah, which we're going to read this Shabbos, so we read about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu appears to Yirmiyahu. He tells him, "B'terem etzarcha babeten yidaticha, I picked you out while you were still in your mother's womb. I've sanctified you from even before you were born to be my Navi, to go and speak to the Jewish people and to the nations of the world." Yirmiyahu HaNavi spends a lot of time delivering nevuos to the nations of the world, to the non-Jewish nations, as many other Navim do as well. And then right from the beginning, Yirmiyahu HaNavi is shown the following nevuah. Really the very first nevuah, the very first imagery that Yirmiyahu is shown. We read in Perek Aleph of Yirmiyahu, Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayhi Dvar Hashem Elai Lemar, Mo Ato Roeh Yirmiyahu. Hashem's word came to me saying, "What do you see, Yirmiyahu?" Va'omar, and I said, Makil Shoked Ani Roeh. I see the staff of an almond tree. Vayomer Hashem Elai, and Hashem said to me, "Hey, Tavto Liros, you're seeing well." That's exactly right. Yeah, you called it. It's a staff of an almond tree. Kishoked Ani Al Devari La Asosa, because I, Hashem, pay close attention to my words, and I carry them out quickly. What does that mean? So it's a play on words in the Hebrew. Shoked, to be diligent about, to focus on, and to carry out something speedily, is related to the word shoked, which means an almond tree. And indeed, the almond tree, Rashi tells us, quoting from Chazal, blossoms in 21 days. And that corresponds, says Rashi, again quoting Chazal, to the 21 days of the Bein HaMitzarim, of the 3-week period. But the message that the Ribbono Shel Olam is giving Yirmiyahu HaNavi right at the beginning of his nevuah is that when I say something, I mean it, and I carry it out with haste. I don't hesitate in carrying out my words. If you think about it, this doesn't seem like a remarkable statement on the part of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Says Hashem, I mean what I say, and I carry out in haste what I say. Would we have thought otherwise? Would we have thought that if Hashem makes a prophecy, or delivers a prophecy, he's just kidding? He doesn't really mean it? Would we have thought that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a prophecy, it's not going to come time, it's not going to come true anytime soon? What's the message? Why is that such an important opening statement to make to Yirmiyahu? So I think appreciating what's remarkable about this statement helps us understand a number of things about Sefer Yirmiyahu, a number of things about the issues that Yirmiyahu faced, and perhaps has some relevance to us today. It's very clear that the audience of Jews to whom Yirmiyahu was addressing could not imagine that the Beis HaMikdash would be destroyed. The message which Yirmiyahu delivered over and over again, that the sins of the Jewish people will be responsible for the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed. And not only will the Beis HaMikdash be destroyed, but it will be destroyed imminently. It's going to happen in everybody's lifetimes, you know, in the lifetimes of all the people that I'm speaking to. That was a message which was utterly foreign and inconceivable to the Jewish people. Where do we see that? So just to take some examples, we look a little bit further in Sefer Yirmiyahu, Perek Zayin, chapter 7. There we find that Yirmiyahu Anavi is told by the Ribbono Shel Olam, Amod b'shar Beis Hashem, stand in the gate of the Beis HaMikdash, V'omarta, and say as follows, Shimu Dvar Hashem Kol Yehuda, Haboim Basharim Ho'el Elishtach Mos Hashem. Listen to what I have to say, all of Yehuda, all of the Jewish people, who come into these gates to bow down before HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Heitivu Darchechem Aleichem. If you improve your ways, V'ashakno Eschem B'amokom Hazeh, I will enable you to continue living in this place. But al tiv techulachem al divrei asheker leimar, don't put your trust in the words of the nevi'ei hasheker, the false prophets who say, heichal Hashem, heichal Hashem, heichal Hashem heima. That they represent the heichal Hashem, the heichal Hashem, the heichal Hashem, the sanctuary of Hashem. The implication being, the repetition of it three times, this is the holy Beis HaMikdash. Many, many Nevi'ei HaSheker, many, many false prophets came to the people and they told them that it is simply impossible for the Beis HaMikdash to be destroyed. It is the Heichal Hashem, it is the dwelling place of Hashem, can't be. And the response of Yirmiyahu HaNavi is, don't listen to them. And Yirmiyahu HaNavi cites an example from earlier Jewish history. He says, we find that the Mishkan rested in Shiloh for over 300 years, and the Mishkan was destroyed, ultimately. It was destroyed during the lifetime of Eli HaKohen. The Mishkan in Shiloh was destroyed. Just as the Mishkan in Shiloh was destroyed, so too the Beis HaMikdash can be destroyed as well. But that was a message which was not being delivered to the Jewish people. They thought, and they were told, there were many Nevi'ei HaSheker. Again, we read through Sefer Yirmiyahu, we find that one of the major problems, one of the major issues that Yirmiyahu had to confront time and time again was the existence of these Nevi'ei HaSheker, these false prophets who were spreading false hope among the people that the Beis HaMikdash would not really be destroyed. And even when 11 years before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, some of the kalim, some of the vessels of the Beis HaMikdash were carried off to Bavel, these Nevi'ei HaSheker said, no, not to worry, they're going to come back. These kalim will come back very, very soon from Bavel. They were constantly building up the hope of the people, and in doing so, preventing the people from doing tshuva. One has to wonder, why didn't the people believe that the Beis HaMikdash was capable of being destroyed? In essence, Yirmiyahu's nevuah wasn't really a tremendous chiddush. It wasn't anything very, very new. The Torah says that if the Jewish people don't behave properly in Eretz Yisrael, so as the Torah says in the Tochacha in Bechukosai, we read it, relatively speaking, just a number of weeks back, right before Shavuos, Bashimosius Mikdashechem. The Pasuk says, if you don't follow the will of Hashem, I will destroy your sanctuaries, Vashimosius Mikdashechem, below Areach Bereach Nichochechem, and I will no longer continue to smell the sweet smell of your karbonos. In other words, I'll destroy the Beis HaMikdash. I'll destroy the karbonos. I will eradicate the karbonos. It's in the Torah, in black and white. It was that very, those statements which so moved Yoshio HaMelech and Chilkiyo to try to get the people to do tshuva. We find the earlier Nevi'im also talk about how if the Jewish people don't follow the will of Hashem, so the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed and Yerushalayim is going to be destroyed. The Jews are going to be exiled. On the Shabbos right before Tisha B'Av, Shabbos Chazon is so called because we read the opening chapter of Sefer Yeshayo, Chazon Yeshayo ben Amot, Sasher Chaza Yehudov Yau Yerushalayim, a terrible, heart-wrenching nevuah in which Yeshayo Anovi, who lived many, many generations before Yirmiyahu, tells the Jewish people that if they don't shape up and don't improve their ways, again, the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. So it was black and white for many, many years that if the Jewish people don't improve their ways, the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. So what was it that Yirmiyahu said that was so unique and so different from those who had come before him, including the Torah itself? And why did the people react to Yirmiyahu with such anger in a way in which they don't seem to have reacted to previous Nevi'im? And I think the answer comes down to the following. The Torah says, eventually, if you don't keep the Torah, in the distant future, there's this possibility that the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed. Yeshayo HaNavi said, in the distant future, the Beis HaMikdash will be destroyed if you don't keep the Dvar Hashem. Yirmiyahu said, the time's up. Yirmiyahu said, right now, your failure to keep the Dvar Hashem, to do Hashem's will result in the Beis HaMikdash being destroyed. I'm being asked just on the chat, were Yirmiyahu and Yeshayahu contemporaries? The answer is no. Yeshayahu lived considerably before Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu and Yechezkel were contemporaries. They lived at the same time. But Yeshayahu was a Navi who was a contemporary of Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who had reigned many, many years before in Yerushalayim. Yeshayahu HaNavi was the Navi at the time that Sancheiriv, the king of Assyria, conquered the northern kingdom and sent them into Golos. But during his time, Sancheiriv tried to conquer Yerushalayim and was astonishingly unsuccessful in doing so. So Yeshayahu prophesied many years before Yirmiyahu, but Yeshayahu was talking about something that's going to happen in the distant future. Yirmiyahu was saying, Tachlis, the time is now. Right now, you know, we're not talking in the abstract. We're not talking in the theoretical. We're not talking about something that's going to happen, you know, way down the pike. You know, that your children, your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren will experience it. It's going to happen right now. It's one thing when you're told theoretically, if you don't behave, punishment is going to come. When you're told tachlis, right now, if you don't behave, punishment is going to come, you have a totally different reaction. You know, it's kind of like, I just speak from experience in the Shul Rabbanus, Rabbanim tell their Balabatim, you shouldn't talk during davening. So in most of the time, it's a little bit of a game, you know. The Rav tells the Balabatim, don't talk during davening. Balabatim say, yeah, of course we're not supposed to talk during davening. Then they talk during davening. And, you know, it's a back and forth. You know, it's almost like everybody has their role. The Rav is supposed to say, don't talk during davening. The Balabatim say, okay, that, you know, you're right, 100%, we shouldn't talk during davening. And they, and, you know, during Chazaras Hashas, they talk about how the Rav said that they shouldn't talk during davening. So I, you know, just kind of, and everybody assumes, yeah, that's just the way it's supposed to be, you know. I know of one case where the Rav told his Balabatim, you're not supposed to talk during davening. He didn't feel that they were being sufficiently compliant. So the Balabatim showed up on shul one Shabbos morning, and they found the shul locked. Now it helped that the Rav happened to own the shul. He was not an employee of the shul. He was actually an owner of the shul. There are certain things you can do when you own the shul as opposed to being an employee of the shul. But you know, all these balabatim who had thought, we know we're not supposed to talk during davening. We get it, you know. But all of a sudden, tachlis, the building was locked. And the Rav had hung out a sign that basically said, till you guys really agree that you're not going to talk during davening, mm-hmm. for real, the shul is going to remain locked. So, you know, that raises the conversation to a whole different level of seriousness. And some are going to react to that by changing their ways. And some are going to pick up and go to a different shul because of chutzpah that the Rav should lock the shul. But people are going to, it can't be same old after something like that. Yirmiyahu's message to the people, conveying Hashem's message to the people, was, Kishoked ani al devari la'asoso. I'm not the first person, I'm not the first source to come and say that if you don't improve your ways, the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed. But what I'm coming with now is with the message that we're in the 11th hour. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm focused, I'm driven. I have no other agenda at this point than to destroy the Beis HaMikdash if everyone here is not going to behave, is not going to do the right thing. And I'm going to do it hastily. From the death of Yoshiyahu, it's 22 years until the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. Most of the activity of Yirmiyahu takes place during those 22 years, begging the people to do tshuva and to recognize the fact that the Churban HaBayis is essentially inevitable at a certain point because the people are not engaging in doing tshuva properly. So that enrages people. It's one thing to say in theory there's going to be a Churban. It's another thing to say in practicality that there's going to be a Churban. So that message of the imminence of the Churban is so incredibly crucial to the Nevuah of Yirmiyahu that it's literally the very first thing that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shares with him. Shoked ani al devari la'asoso, I am focused on getting this done now. The time for the Churban is nigh. We are in the 11th hour, and you know, all the Nevi'ei HaShek can tell you that, you know, it hasn't happened up till now. The Beis HaMikdash is basically invincible. Yeah, in theory, it could be destroyed, but it's not going to happen during our lifetimes. Says Yirmiyahu HaNavi, no. The prophecies of my predecessor, Yeshayahu, for many years before, the prophecies foretold in the Torah HaKadosha itself, those are all things which are now al haperek. They're about to become true, you know, in the next short period of time. I think just trying to bring this to contemporary times, you know, we're living in incredibly unprecedented times. I think it's fair to say that we have an appreciation, sadly, of the magnitude of the Churban living as we are under the shadow of the coronavirus that we probably never would have imagined before. You know, we were all locked out of our own shuls for months on end. And again, although it's not anywhere near the same as the destruction of a city with massive carnage and the burning down of the Beis HaMikdash. I don't mean to compare the two entirely, but we certainly do have a little bit of a taste of what it means to go into Galus, and we have a little bit of a taste of what it means to be exiled from our shuls, from our Mikdashei Me'at, our miniature sanctuaries, and that colors the way we go into a 3 weeks period in a way in which we've never quite had it before. And I think one of the lessons that we're still learning from the whole coronavirus situation is this notion of shoked ani al devari la'asoso, that things can happen in tremendous haste. You know, the world turned over on its head within days. You know, we all remember the coronavirus was something way off in China. Wuhan, I mean, whoever heard of Wuhan? And then all of a sudden, it came to New York. Okay, but it's still at Westchester. For those of us who don't live in Westchester, you know, it's not imminently relevant. And then all of a sudden, no, it's not not just Westchester. It's everywhere, and we're still not out of it. Shoked ani al devari la'asoso. In the case of Yirmiyahu, he was conveying the idea that the churban habayis, the disruption of the Beis Hamikdash, would take place with haste and imminently. In our own case, we've become witness to the fact that when the Ribbono Shel Olam wants to effect a change and turn things upside down, he can do so in the blink of an eye. And that's an incredible, incredible lesson to take to heart and to realize. The flip side of that is that we're also assured that the same way things can go l'ra'a, that they can become difficult and terrible within a short period of time, they can also flip around and go l'tova, they can go and become good in a short period of time. I think a major thing to daven for as we go into Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is precisely that. A tainis is a time of tshuva. It's a time to beseech HaKadosh Baruch Hu to have pity on us, to have mercy on us. And in this case, it's the first tainis tzibur that we're experiencing since the beginning of this coronavirus. I think certainly behooves us as we go into the 3 weeks and the tainis and the fast day of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz to use it as a time not just to commemorate the tragedies of long ago, but to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu for relief from the mini churban that we're experiencing today. I want to wish everybody a wonderful evening, and Be'ezus Hashem, we will pick up a week from tonight.
Thank you, Rabbi Ram. The next year will begin at 9:30 with Mrs. Penina Bernstein. Have a wonderful evening.